Okay, we're going to go another round with Gerald Epling as we talk about bioscience, and we'll take your phone calls. So all that is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Gerald Epling, and your phone calls. We'll also take some fast blast questions from you as well in this final hour that seems to go by very quickly. Indeed. Ready for some more calls, Gerald?
Yes, I definitely am.
All right, let's go to our wild card line. Naomi, you are on the air. Hi there.
This is Naomi from Ohio. Hello.
Good, go ahead.
I just want to tell Gerald that he's late. My dearly departed mother talked to plants in the 70s.
Wonderful.
And her philodendrons loved her gospel music.
They are sensitive.
They thrived on it.
Yes, they love gospel.
That's all
You're
I
right
wanted to
that.
Say, because you were talking about something I knew about.
Oh.
She didn't know none of the technical stuff, but she played music and she talked. And she had a green thumb on the inside and the outside. I did not acquire that gift. I have a green thumb in the garden.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But I love the conversation. I'm a first-time caller.
Thank you for calling.
Yes, good evening.
Okay, what is it about the emotion of song and goodwill that makes a plant flourish?
Well, with the plants, I've never had a plant lie to me. And that's saying a lot about a life form. So with a plant, you have this unobstructed communication where you don't worry about what it's going to think, say, or do, and you're free to express yourself, to enjoy it. And it responds to that, and that grows, and it affects your area, your neighborhood, your surroundings, the people you meet, I think people you don't meet. There's just that tie of life calling to life in a positive, affirming way with no cause to stop or second guess or think about it or look up a literature review or something. It's just, hi, how are you? Hey, I'm fine.
All right, let's go back. Susan, you are on the air east of the Rockies. Hi there.
Hi, George and Gerald.
Hi, Susan.
I want to share something with you. I had a cleaning lady. I had two bonsai plants.
Yes.
And she separated them. And when I looked at them again, it's like their branches were reaching out for each other. So I put them together.
Yes.
And they wound their branches like they were holding hands. And, of course, the cleaning lady's gone now. I have four bonsai. And
yes.
I really care about them, you know. And it's such an experience for me that they have contact with each other.
Right.
And I had two tropical ones and then two bonsai. And the two tropicals didn't like to be by the window because it was cold. So I took those two and put them on the table, and the other two left them on the window. And they were just so happy. It was like they were both shivering. I said, okay, I'm taking you off the window.
Good for
and,
you.
And I talked to them. And yeah. I'm in Staten Island, New York, and there's a beautiful park. I love the mountains. I love green. I don't know. There's something about greenery. It strengthens me. And I'll be 73. And I can't climb the mountains anymore. So I go through the park, and I actually look at the trees and the grass and everything. And it's so beautiful. And it gives you such a strong feeling, and it keeps you healthy. I don't know if, you know, it sounds strange, but
it's true.
It keeps me healthy.
It makes sense to me.
And I wanted to share this, and I just love your program. I turned it on when I couldn't sleep. I have insomnia.
Oh.
Thanks, Susan. Trees. Have you hooked up trees to any of these electrodes?
Oh, I have hooked up trees. I've done some, I do remote monitoring with trees, just pull a leaf off of a tree, bring it in, and turn up the gain to 20, 30, 50,000. And then watch the tree respond to the wind and the weather and the rain, and I can see responses. I had an unfortunate situation. I had a tree that had decided its roots needed to grow under my house, and I thought, well, I'm going to miss that tree. So,
you didn't.
Oh, I did. I did. I mean, love nature. Plants are good, but, you know.
You killed it.
Well, I chopped it down, dug it up, yes.
How could you do that after putting electrodes on all these plants, knowing that they react?
There are things that you
Gerald.
Have to organize. It was going from my house. So I pulled it up and I replanted another tree.
Well,
it was hard, but I thought it needed to be done.
I'm in shock. I'm speechless.
Well, I did record the event, too, actually, and it did respond.
Oh, no, that's sick. You recorded the event of a tree you killed?
Yes.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Good evening, Professor, and George. I'm sorry, I was a little busy with the internet.
That's
I was trying
okay.
to send you a report.
Gotcha,
I heard you talking about putting water in the microwave and watering the plants and then all the water, and there's a vast difference. My question was, were you aware of the magnetically treated water where they've used it in the industry where they reduced the water bills in a golf course in Las Vegas dramatically with it? But what happened was it induces a dipolar moment in the molecular structure of the water, so it actually will go deeper in the ground and make the roots go further. And there were other reports on the effects of the way the plants grow, even along high power lines where you will see a difference quite literally of the plants growing more along the lines.
I love it. Do you have some literature on that golf course?
Yes. Oh, on the golf course. I'll have to dig for that. I sent you a quick link to one of my Angel Fire web pages, and a number have been taken down from the research I was doing. The page I sent you, I haven't edited for... It's more of a rough draft from what I was doing in the mid-90s or 98 or so.
Yes.
With the effects of... Oh, and there's a link in there, though. The one report is up on the oscillation of DNA from the effects of electromagnetic fields. And there's only a few certain reports on that.
Right.
That's scanned, and you click on those pages, it'll actually take you right to the report that I scanned at the University of Washington when I lived in Seattle.
How wonderful. What was your name again?
Tom Cromer, I go by the Toxic Reverend. I'm an environmental technologist.
I got your email.
Good, good. Did you get this one I just sent?
No, I got the one earlier today.
Right, it's probably maybe another different subject than what you're particularly on about.
Interesting.
I hope I get a chance to discuss some of that with you privately. There's some things going on majorly right now in my life with the police shootings here in the area, and I just had a death in the family. I have to go back home to Cleveland for a moment, and I'm going to be running for the next probably week or two.
Well, I'll let you give you some peace, and thank you for calling.
As long as he's not running from the law.
No, I think he's just got a lot going on, a lot on his plate right now. Some of the things he mentioned have to do with structuring water, so that it's more useful. Should I talk about that briefly?
Yeah, please.
Okay. We all have a lot of water that affects us. We're maybe 80% water. And if that water has a good structure, as Emoto has showed, you can expect different effects. Waters of hydration, the ions that cross the cellular membrane have a positive charge, but they don't have a positive charge inside the cell because these water molecules come and connect up with the calcium ions. So they're the waters of hydration, as they're called. And I think many other scientists think that it's important to structure that water so that it will easily pull off of the calcium so that you get a better electronic feel, a better electronic transit of the membrane. When he was talking about the dipolar moments, arranging the water so that it would penetrate into the soil better, be more easily absorbed into the plant roots, and come back up through the stems and the leaves and give more life energy to the plant. And that's a fascinating thing. And it does directly relate to the microwaving of water. That's a way to show how you can damage the water. I have a problem with damaging things. I really hate to damage things. It has to be major before I'll go and chop down a tree or something. It just has to be a big, important thing.
Unless its roots are going under your house.
Well, it's, you know, I love living here.
The house.
Right. That's got to have the house.
Well, all right. Wild card line, you're on the air with us. Gary, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, Gary.
Back in 1990, I was living in Pacific Beach, Southern California, and I was right on the bay, about three houses up. And my next-door neighbor and I were sitting on my porch, and we were looking out toward the bay, and she said, you know that tree in my yard right there? It's really blocking your view of the bay. She said, if you want to chop that down, I don't have a problem with it. It'll give you a better view of the bay as long as you clean it up. I said, well, let me talk to my friend when he gets home, and we'll see what happens. And my friend got home, and we were standing out in the front yard, and we were looking at the tree, and I said, oh, by the way, Lisa said that if we wanted to, we could chop this tree down so we could have a better view of the bay. And as I said it, the tree just bent straight down to the ground and snapped about 2 feet from the on the trunk from the ground.
Was there any wind or anything?
There was no wind, and my friend accused me of taking an axe to it and, you know, prepping it and all this, and I did nothing.
Yes.
And when we examined the tree, it was moist inside. It was alive. It was like, it was almost as if a hand had come down, a giant hand, and just grabbed the tree and just like bent it down and snapped it.
How bizarre.
It freaked me out.
Yes.
It freaked me out. I was wondering, have you ever heard of anything like that? I mean, I thought maybe a microburst, but we were outside. We would have noticed that.
Yeah, that's why I asked if there was any wind. Well, no, I haven't heard of anything just like that. I can speculate, but that's very interesting.
I've always said that the tree overheard us talking about it, blocking the view to the bay, and it just wanted to give us a better view. So it committed suicide.
Well, I don't know. The trees see it so much as committing suicide if they've had seeds and if they've had replication. I don't think it's so hard for them to move on. But that's an interesting story.
Can people learn something with these experiments for their own lives?
I think they can. There's the cognitive matter that they can work with, the fact that Cleve Baxter did experiments and other people have replicated his work, and I've replicated his work, so it's scientifically becoming very clear that there is a connection between things. And then below the cognitive level, things that maybe you're not aware of on top, it gives you a bigger appreciation for the life, the universe, the world around us, the people that are near us, and other living things.
Let's go. First-time caller line. Your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks.
I have a question regarding the sensors that Gerald's using. I monitor a little bit of a different kind of a life form, and I do so from an interface using gold hair wires, and I monitor from 0 to 196K and seem to have found what I believe to be an intelligent conversation that I kind of equate with trying to communicate with porpoises. I don't know much about that subject, but I speak and I think and I get responses in waveforms, and I speed them up on below the audio spectrum, and I slow them down above the audio spectrum. The device, I'm looking at another device that's kind of expensive, and it would take me up to 2.4 meg.
Mm-hmm.
But the only I'm monitoring the only way. This started after listening to Cleve Baxter.
He stipulated a lot of research.
I came up with the idea of placing gold hair electrodes into a capture device that I interfaced into an extremely sensitive software application that would give me the ability to see things I can't hear. And the results are phenomenal. I'm building it and putting it on my website, and it's fungus.
Oh, there's a lot going. You're in the right range. I see what you're doing, sure. You've got, from up to 250 kilohertz, you've got the undersea animals can make noise. And you're near the ocean, I imagine?
Yes, it is.
Makes sense. So if plants can respond to sounds and actually have different genetic expression, it may be reasonable to look for more ways that plants may be responding to sound. You may be hearing the sounds of the animals communicating in the sea coming through the plants being picked up in your monitor. Possibility.
Why are we getting so many calls about fungus and whether you put electrodes to it?
The cutting edge right now is looking into whether weed killers are hurting bees and damaging our environment. And the key connection may be damaging the fungus and the bacteria that grow around the roots of plants that help the plants get the nutrients that it needs to live. Plus, there are a lot more micro little type life forms out there than there are people. Just the biomass, it's much greater, so we need to be aware of them. And the scary thing is there's some people that want to go ahead and genetically manipulate these life forms. They look at them as just no big deal. You would think they were putting together an electronic circuit or something, and I'm just not so sure it's a great idea to slice and dice the genome, link it together in different ways, and try to get it to do your bidding. There can be surprises with that.
Amarillo, Texas. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, George. I hope you can hear me all right.
Sure. It's, loud and clear.
Okay. There was some photographing the human spirit, you know, the aura around a human.
Yeah.
And I remember a photograph of a leaf that was cut in half, and the leaf's aura remained.
Right.
I was wondering if your guests have ever tried photographing the plant and, like, try to, you know, think of something and see if the plant changes its aura, or if sitting a person next to the plant, if the plant will exchange its aura colors with the human aura colors. Like, we gather garbage all the time in our aura. And, of course, a plant takes our carbon monoxide and gives us oxygen. I was wondering if your guests ever looked upon those lines.
That's you, Gerald.
Right. Well, the actual using of Kirlian photography or something like that it's difficult because you can't get a lot of samples. You have to take the photograph, or you can have perhaps a charge coupled display. Maybe you can get a moving image. There are some people working in that area. I've chosen a different route. I take 44,100 samples per second of the electrical changes in the body, and it's the electrical change that precedes all other electrochemical changes. It's the electrical change that is somewhat an embarrassment to many scientists, because we know what happens when a cell gets excited and it starts a cascade of events, but we don't know what starts that.
You've got recommendations on how people, like plants, can start tuning themselves up, feeling better.
I certainly do. Yes, in our society we have so much stress and so much going on. If a person has their colors, maybe their colors are going dry, maybe they're not able to imagine things as well as they can. I know in my work I try to imagine a circuit and try to imagine it from beginning to end and make a complete picture in my mind. Or I may try to imagine a cloud, or I may go back and pull up memories that have been pleasant, a waterfall, something like that. But with age, this can diminish, but there are ways to get it back. One of the best ways is to use lecithin. Lecithin's good. And you can get something called phosphatidylserine. This research was done by William Crook, and it's in a book called The Memory Cure. So that's my source that I would refer other people for, Department of Health and Human Research. National Institutes of Health. There were some good studies done related to large organizations, double-blind studies, etc., that show that phosphatidylserine is important. Now, the interesting thing about this is I would caution anyone not to take the phosphatidylserine or phosphatidylcholine or ginkgo biloba in combination before bedtime, because you will see so many colors in your mind, and you will get to call up images that you want to review, and it will be so active, you will have a hard time sleeping.
And maybe, but if you can sleep, weird dreams. Stay with us.
Right.
Gerald Epling is with us. We'll take final calls next. On our next Coast to Coast program, Michael Cremo joins us. Forbidden archaeology, human devolution, how humans, he believes, have not evolved, but are in the process of devolving. And he believes we've been around for hundreds of millions of years. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Gerald Epping. Gerald, in your book, How to Have Conversations with Plants, is there a favorite section there for you?
There is a favorite section, and it's sort of an embarrassment in a way, but I think it's important to show what goes on. I thought I'd really have to turn up the gain for the zinnias to get a recording of the zinnia being pollinated, and I put in there my first response. It was totally off scale. I blew it right offline, and then I dialed it down, and it just shows that you have to keep trying, you have to keep going forward. If you're going to get a higher sense perception, if you're going to move forward and experience these things, you've got to look at what went wrong, see what goes right, and move forward.
And did you?
I did. Later on, I got it, and it's in there in the white paper, How to Have Conversations with Plants. It shows a much more manageable response of the plant to pollination. And what I didn't show there is if I turn the gain back up, I could see when other zinnias near the monitored zinnia were being pollinated because it showed up as a smaller image.
So what would happen if, let's say, you had an apple orchard and you just played great music and beamed it at the apple orchard?
I think they'd love it. I think they would produce wonderful apples
for
you.
What a great experiment that would be.
It sure would.
Let's go to our wild card line. Hi there. You're on the air with us.
Hey, George. It's Joe in Salt Lake City.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, I just had a comment and then a question for the guest. First of all, one thing that always used to blow my mind is to think about how if you do believe in evolution on this earth, then we all have one common ancestor, anything with carbon in it, simple cell organisms, flora, fauna, you name it. We're all from the family tree, so to speak. And a question for Dr. Epling is, what do you feel his comment on psychoactive plants and the work of Terence McKenna and Pinchbeck? Thanks.
Okay.
Yes, well, there is a lot of room to grow and to explore that. An earlier Epling, Carl Clausen Epling, studied a mint plant that had a psychoactive effect, and I would like to study that carefully. I would never eat the plant because the plant, from what I can see, from my understanding of neuroscience, will probably damage the limbic system. Limbic system's important. That's where you have your affect, your emotion, you process memories. And if you want to continue to have good memories, be happy, have a good life, you don't want to damage your limbic system. So I would, and I haven't tested this, but I would suppose it damages the limbic system. I think there's good reason to believe that. But what if you got some of the Salvia divinorum, brought it in, wired it up, and then had some experiences near the plant? I mean good experiences. Maybe you have a friend come over and you have tea, or maybe you bring a flower in, or maybe the sun rises. I think that that plant may be a little bit more responsive than another plant, so it would be interesting in that regard. The psilocybin, I'm not so sure. There are differences between plants and fungi that make it somewhat more complicated, and I would stick with the plants.
Okay, thanks. Let's go next to our East of the Rockies line. Hi there. You're on the air with us.
Hey, George. Hey, Gerald. It's Willie from Albany.
Hey, Willie.
Hi, Willie.
Hey, first of all, George, I want to say you're the best. You get me through work every night, and when you're not on the show, it's just not the same without you.
Well, thank you.
But anyways, I have a cat, and I bought him some cat grass. And it grew fine, you know, but the cat didn't seem to like to eat it or chew it. He would just lay next to it like it was his friend and protect it.
May have been.
Once it started dying, he didn't want to leave the cat grass alone. And if you went anywhere near it, he sensed that you were going to harm it or something.
Oh.
It just seems weird. Like, animals must have the extrasensories that plants have.
They do. They sense that. Now, and some of the work from Korea, it shows that genes that are upregulated by light are also upregulated by sound. So perhaps playing music, I'm suspicious that the grass maybe didn't have enough light. I've had that problem. Do you think that
might be? Yeah, maybe. It could be. I'm growing more right now for him, and I'm going to try to take better care of it because, I mean, I realized that he loved it. So.
He probably did. And if the cat ever gets a little low on minerals or something, it can have a little bite of that grass, and it will be perfectly, you know, if it's something that's good for the cat, then it should be a good situation all the way around.
Right. All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks, Lee. Let's go next to our first-time caller line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Gary, and I'm in Fresno.
Hey, Gary.
Say, I have a two-part question.
Right.
And first of all, I grew some a Joshua tree from seed. And now my elevation here is 357 feet above sea level.
Right.
And I know that generally Joshua trees don't grow, and about 3,000 feet is about where you usually find them. Now, it grew wonderfully for about 3 or 4 years.
Yes.
And then it got moved to a different location, about broke my heart. The poor thing died. Now, I was curious whether it was the elevation or perhaps the change in location. And the second part of the question is, would colloidal silver be of any value in adding to the plant?
Oh, that is a really good question. What you're asking, it's two parts. In one part, you need to talk to a person who's schooled in plants and knows where they grow. And you know the challenges you're experiencing with the Joshua tree. And then there are the underground gardens in Fresno. Have you been there?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so you see what can be done, you know, with orange trees just a little bit below the earth, letting them grow up. So there are wonderful things that can be done. My sense on the Joshua trees that I've been with and that I've seen is that they like to be in one place. They don't like to move a lot. And I suspect maybe moving was a problem for the tree. Now, colloidal silver is it's an antibacterial agent. So the soil needs some friendly bacteria and friendly little things down there to help the roots grow.
All very good.
So it could be counterindicated.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right.
Do you do much traveling at all, Gerald?
I haven't done much for about a year.
Or you don't go out into the wilderness looking at these plants?
Yeah, I thought you meant like gone to Europe or flown to California or gone to Florida or something.
Speaking engagements too, though.
Yes. I haven't done many speaking engagements. I've really changed my focus and started to publicly talk about this. This is one of the very few talk shows I've ever done. So it's somewhat new to me. I'm totally willing to go and do speaking engagements and talk with people and demonstrate things. And it's a new phase of my life that I'm very...
All right. Well, don't tell them you cut down a tree.
I'll try to keep that quiet. Okay.
Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George and Gerald.
Hi.
This is Susan calling from Vero Beach, Florida.
Sure, Susan.
And I just wanted to let you know a couple of things and ask a question of you.
Yeah.
I have a garden I've been working with for over 30 years, and I've planted probably about 20 different exotic fruit trees because we're where the tropics begin. So I have loquats and mulberries and black sapotes and white sapotes. And I've experimented with all kinds of things to make them grow. But I've heard of a fellow and actually tested the water that he's created from some kind of a apparatus that he puts on the water spout. And it's similar, I believe, to what Drumvalo Melchizedek and Len Horowitz and Dr. Brian O'Leary talk about, the sacred water or the ionized water or the oxygenated water. And I'm dying to get him. I don't know how much the apparatus would cost. I don't think he's able to mass produce it as yet, to water my garden with this kind of water. Because when I tasted it, it was water that came from a well that when he gave me a bottle of the ordinary water, it smelled like rotten eggs because your well water in Florida can smell really like sulfur.
Right.
It smells really bad. But once he put this little tap on the water spout, the water came out so sweet and fragrant that when you drank it, you felt so energized. And I know Drumvalo Melchizedek had done experiments on this with a fish tank where the water was really polluted and full of green algae. And when he put a little bit of this water in it, it cleared the water tank up. And they actually went to Lake, I think it's Isabal in Turkey, which is one of the most polluted bodies of water in the world. You
right.
can light it with a match. And they poured the water,
God.
This sacred water in it, and it cleared the lake up temporarily because they kept pouring the manufactured silt or whatever it is, pollution, out of that lake into the lake, and it re-clogged up again. But have you also heard of the people in Findhorn that grow plants that are cabbages that are 50 pounds, and that's my goal, my ideal in the future is to have this garden of Eaton, E-A-T-I-N,
yeah.
where I can just forget what happens to the economy or anything else. I can go out and have my mulberries and avocados and papayas and mangoes, and I can just eat out of my garden that I've been nurturing for 30 years. I'm hoping eventually my garden will nurture me.
Well, I'm going to assume that you are a good gardener and you have all of the basics in order. Yes, Findhorn, the people there had an advantage that is really a great advantage. If you know someone who can see the responses of the plants, that's a real leg up. To gain that ability, one thing to do is to rise early in the morning before the sun comes up. You have a lot of receptors in your eyes that can sense low light conditions. They can sense a lot of detail. When the lights get brighter, many of these receptors drop off, so you're not as sensitive. So get up early in the morning before the sunrise. Go outside. Let your eyes accommodate to the darkness for maybe 30 minutes and watch the leaves as the sun rises, especially of a rapidly growing plant. And eventually you make it to a point where you can see some energy, some light, some subtle characteristics on that leaf that are kicking in. When you develop that sensitivity, it will help you replicate some of the effects that they had at Findhorn. Of course, Findhorn, you know there are books you can read and things that you can follow, and it's very well documented. The water, structured water, is a good thing. The oxygenation, I can't speak to that because it sounds like what he's doing was actually just structuring the water. The problem with structured water right now is it doesn't hold the structure, so that's why you have point delivery apparatuses, things that, you know, you put on your water faucet and it'll structure it. And one of the things I'm working on is something that you can structure the water and it will hold that structure for 90 days or more. And this would allow people who live in a remote area, and maybe they don't have resources to buy a structuring machine, but they'd like to have a gallon of structured water. This would help them have that. So that's what I'm working towards right now. It's my current project.
Okay, we'll take some final calls here. The clock is now ticking. West of the Rockies, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, is this me?
Yeah, me. Go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen.
Hi.
I have a great big Monterey cypress tree in the front yard, and I was trimming some dead branches off of it. And I feel this tap, tap, tap on my back, you know, when somebody's trying to get your attention.
Yes.
And I turned around thinking it was my husband.
Right.
Well, no, nobody was there. Except this branch on the tree, just one branch, was waving up and down. None of the other branches.
Right.
Just this one that was about 3 feet above my head.
Right.
In the back of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a question.
Yes.
A week or two ago on MythBusters, have you ever seen that show?
I have seen it, yes.
They were trying to get a plant to respond. I believe they had an encephalocardiograph.
Yeah, something that amplifies the brain signal.
Did you see that episode?
Oh, I saw that. You know, they did get the response, but...
They did?
They did. You know, that's the wonderful thing about the media today. When I deal with people from coast to coast AM, they are wonderful people, talented, and they make things go smoothly. And for MythBusters, you've got a whole array of people. You've got cameramen, you've got sound people, and they were really interested. You could tell because they captured that response. And if you look carefully, when they first threatened the Dracaena, you can clearly see the response. They discounted it. They said, well, you know.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. And I thought, well, were they using the wrong machine?
No, they had the right machine. They got the response. Think about it this way. I can take a Dracaena, water it today. It's not going to respond to water for a week and a half.
Right.
They're okay. Just not, and you can terrorize a plant. You can raise the base level, the baseline, so that you don't hardly see a response. It's similar to on a bright day, how much brighter does it get if you add a few more candles? Well, you can't hardly tell. When they did the thing of shocking the fellow, I mean, his baseline had to be very, very high.
Gerald, is there any ancient texts that talk about similar work that you've done? Obviously, they didn't have the electrodes, but did they know this?
It was known. I can tell. Jesus said, when he was, I believe it was on, when he was going into the city of Jerusalem, he said that he was told by the religious people of the day that the people shouldn't give him accolades, they shouldn't praise him and say this is a good thing. And Jesus' response, as I understand it, was something to the effect of, if you tell the people to be quiet, the rocks will sound out. So that shows that he was aware of what was going on.
Next up, let's go to you, Lynn in Canada. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. I'm from Canada.
Uh-huh.
I wanted, this story is true. I have friends that I've described, you know, the outlook of my these trees, and it's unbelievable, but I need to tell you.
Yes.
I had this big spruce pine tree in the back of my yard. I have moved, but it was there, and over the 3 summers, I had noticed it started to split in two, sort of on top, and one part was, a queen and a king. So I used to look at it and say, they're overlooking the yard and taking care of all the other trees and flowers. The second summer, it was more defined, and I said, there's my king and queen, you know, spruce pine. The third summer, I used to sit in my back porch and just marvel at the nighttime and look at it. It was just beautiful. It startled me when I saw this form forming, and it looked like, you know, the Pan god You know, the yes. little, like a little doubler's face? Mm-hmm. And it was there, and I looked, and I even brought some friends. I said, do you see what I see? And I, you know, was pointing it out to them, and they said, you know, yes. I said, there's the king and the queen. And in front of it is this big, almost like grinny, devilish grin. You know, we called it the, you know, pan.
Right.
And by the end of the summer, this is incredible, the king had the pan by the neck, and his whole face and neck was turned toward the king, and it looked like the king had his head, the neck, well, he had his neck crunched, and it was bent, and it was almost like saying, you're not going to ruin my garden, or, you know, and it was just incredible. I mean, I am so sorry that I didn't take pictures.
I am, too. You could have gotten them to us.
Really,
we could have posted
them. I thought I was seeing things, but I have people to verify, and it's true. Over the period of, like, three summers, this took place.
What do you think of this, Gerald?
It just brings up the importance of keeping good records. She wishes she'd taken pictures, and wouldn't that be great? You could put it up at the website, and we could all see it.
I would have done that, indeed. Hey, Gerald, we are out of time. Give us your website one more time, sir.
Right. Bioexperience.com. You can go in and research papers and things that I've written. And ArthurEpling.com. I have a newsletter. Sign up. I'll send you what I'm doing.
Always spell the last website, would you?
ArthurEpling.com.
Great. Thanks. Appreciate it, Gerald.
My pleasure. Thank you, George.
Fascinating work. The work of plants hooking up little electrodes to them. It is amazing. It really is. For Wayne Roberts, Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Gina Yates, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.